All right. So I'm speaking with Pam Stangland, principal of Ames Middle School. You've been principal here for 5 years. On January 21st, on Saturday, I woke up, went out, and got the paper off my stoop and saw the headline about the achievement gap at the Ames Middle School. And I immediately thought of Kathy, who comes in every month to talk about issues at the schools and often has great news about developments, especially in the elementary level. What about you? How did you feel when you saw that headline?
Well, of course, that wasn't the first I knew about the report card. And what is, I'll backtrack just a little bit to go back to the first year the report card was issued, which was 2015. And in 2015, Ames Middle School was the only school in the district to receive the exceptional ranking. It was also one of only 3% across the state. So at that point in time, there was no press about that, no communication at all. Now that we've gone down two rankings, now that has become hard news. And our scores are not a lot different, I'll tell you. We have went down in our minority achievement gap and also with our SES achievement gap, which are factors that we have been looking at longitudinally for over 4 years now. So this is not news to us. It wasn't shocking to us. It was like, yep, this is what it is. And I, being the principal, I was not pleased with the headlines, of course, but another side of me felt like it was a great opportunity to actually showcase what we are doing and that we know this is an issue. We're not the only school of our size struggling with issues such as this, and this is a very exact same issue. So this was just an opportunity to say, we're here. This is a reality. These are the things that we're doing. These are the things that we have done, and these are the things we continue to do.
So can you tell us some of the things that you've been doing, knowing over 4 years or more that these achievement gaps exist?
Definitely. When I first came to Ames Middle School, we have a fantastic staff and we have a very, very talented student body. But as we all know, our student population in Ames has changed in the last 15 to 20 years. And one of the things that we needed to do as a staff was move beyond the I've taught them phase to the they've learned it phase. I think that in the past, teaching was the focus, and we needed to focus on quality teaching. Now we're focusing on learning. I taught it, and I might have taught it brilliantly, but these four kids didn't learn it. So what do we need to do differently? So that's been our focus for the last 4 to 5 years, and really working on the culture of the building and working to make sure that every student is included, that every student has resources and supports, and that every teacher has resources and supports. If I taught it this way, and that may be the only way that I know how to teach it, am I getting some supports and reteaching it in a different way? So we've instituted our tutorial period, and I don't know if you're familiar with that. Our tutorial period actually is a tier one or two intervention for just that situation that I described. I'm a teacher. I taught my 28 kids in my class. We assessed all of the students together with all of the other, let's say, literacy teachers, and four of my kids didn't get the learning that was intended. So at that point in time, we gather those kids, and we work with them in small groups during a specific time during the school day, not an after school. You come in, and you're going to be punished working on other work. This is time during the school day that they get that immediate intervention time rather than waiting until the subject matter has gone too far down the road.
Okay, so that is something that you're implementing across the school body.
Right.
How does that relate to racial disparity or social economic status disparity? How does that those two factors play in?
Okay, that's a great question, and that's what we've been looking at too. So as the IRA report card, one of the downfalls with the IRA report card, according to my opinion, is that it only takes into account the IO assessments. It doesn't take into account any of the other factors that we look at, the data pieces that we look at. We look at grades in the classrooms. We look at behavioral data, student referrals. We look at student attendance. We look at acquisition of essential standards and those curriculum-based measurements. We look at all of those pieces together, and then we design interventions based on that. So one of the things that we've been noticing as we've been going through all of that data, we've been noticing it at team level with teams of teachers. We've been noticing it at an administrative level when we look over the whole student population, is that some of our minority populations are overrepresented in some groups and underrepresented in other groups. Here's the caution with that. That's not only true for our Black population or students of color, but it's also true for our students who are living in lower SES conditions. So those are the two things that we took a stab at this year and we decided would be our professional development focus. In the fall, we hosted a poverty simulation in which we had representatives come in and actually walk us through that so that our teachers could understand some of the struggles and troubles that our students in poverty face every day. Our focus for this January 16th day was to be a racial discussion and examine our racial data and to really brainstorm different ways that we could help with that. We had 7 professors lined up that were going to be helping from Iowa State to walk us through this process. And again, we started planning that last February or March. So this is not a new thing for us or, oh, no, we need to react from a report card that was just issued. This is something that we're well aware of.
Okay, so that professional development date, of course, was canceled due to icy weather. Is there going to be a makeup for that?
Well, we're working on that. Of course, that was the optimal day because that was our Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and we had the university was closed, and so we could borrow the professors' times and talents during that time. So Dr. Anthony Jones is actually working with that committee to try to reschedule, and we're hoping that we can get that in after they're out for the summer. But, of course, we're still in session, and we have our extended professional development days in May.
What do you tell a teacher if they come to you and say that they're having difficulty reaching, say, the African-American students in their classroom? What kind of advice do you give them?
There are tons of resources, and one of the things that we're very fortunate to have in this community is have resources both in the building and outside of the building. Right now we have 4 counselors who are in the building who are expert in developing rapport with students, relationships with students. Sometimes we have to just sit down and really get to know the kids. I'll give you an example. When it comes to attendance, one of the assumptions that teachers and myself were making about a student one time with attendance was, this student doesn't care enough to come to school. They're arriving late 2 or 3 days a week. What's going on with the student? Well, when we sat down with a counselor and we sat down with the student and said, tell us more about this, talk to us. You know, middle schoolers are intelligent human beings. We don't just do things to them. We do things with them. And so when we said, we're trying to help you, what's going on? We found that this student was responsible for putting his preschool sibling on the bus on certain mornings of the week as his parents were going to work early. That changed our whole perspective. But we wouldn't have had that knowledge unless we had had good relationships with that student, the teachers had good relationships, the counselors had good relationships, and we could talk through those things. Outside resources, we have United Way. We have a lot of community organizations that we work with. We work through Iowa State, and we also have a Connect program that we connect students in poverty and with different racial backgrounds with a mentor that helps them kind of go through the college process. So we try to not look at just the middle school years, but we try to look at all the way through. How is this going to impact you in high school? How is this going to impact you in your future?
Are there any curriculum adjustments to curriculum that would help make minority populations feel more included?
That's a great question, and that's something that we have not spent a lot of time with. We're trying to do things that are inclusive to all of our students. So we haven't looked at, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with Iowa Assessments and Iowa Tests of Basic Skills. And we've had different cultures and different communities look at that test and say, oh, that's not the terminology that I would use. That doesn't speak to me as a member of the racial group with which I identify. So those are things that definitely could help us. To be honest, we haven't reached that point in our process yet.
Okay. So you were focusing on the test. I know, I've actually written some of those tests. You know, you go through a minority, but it's very, mm-hmm. You know, a minority review. But I understand that completely. I'm kind of asking about the culture of the building. How have you developed the culture of the building to make students from all backgrounds feel welcome?
Well, I think that's a testament to the teachers. And I can't sit here and say, this teacher, this teacher, this teacher. I can give you example after example of what individual teachers have done and collectively. I really believe that we have moved from that, I taught them, they just didn't learn it, to I taught them, they didn't learn it, now what? How can I help? And you know what? That's a reflection on myself. When I came to this building 5 years ago, our average per year of number of student F grades, failing grades, was around 400. Now it is less than half of that. So as a building, we are working toward that. It's not acceptable. And I think teachers feel great ownership. If you failed my class, I failed you. Yes, you had a part in it, but I also had a part in it. So I think that's the biggest area. We couldn't have even addressed these subgroups without that understanding and that cultural competence of these kids are ours. If we would have started with, let's just take a look at a subgroup and how can we help this subgroup, I think we would have been chasing our tail a bit.
That makes sense. What do you make of the disciplinary data? That's also been an issue that's been raised by a few people. White students are disciplined much less frequently in relationship to their proportion in the, however you say that,
right.
of the population. Is there some cultural learning that needs to go on around discipline?
Definitely. And if you look at that data, that's very similar to other schools around the country that are having this discussion. That does not make it right. And that doesn't mean that that's data that we don't want to change. One of the things that we've looked at is just behaviors that may be culturally relevant to a specific group. So we really had to dig into, okay, let's look at our categories. So I've asked Central Office to have us to really dig down into those categories. And categories are designed by the Iowa Department of Education, and sometimes they're really too broad for what we need. So, for instance, they have all of these categories, brought a knife to school, brought a gun to school, brought a bomb, threatened someone, had a huge fight with injury. Those aren't problems here at Ames Middle School. Our problems are disrespect, defiance, maybe not being in the right location at the right time, those types of things. So we are digging into that data more to say, for instance, it's one of our beliefs that we want to get data to support that some of our students are being disciplined for their volume. They're not being disruptive per se, but if I'm walking down the hall and I'm a sixth grade white girl with my two white friends, I might be talking to them in this tone of voice. If I'm an African American or a black male walking down, I might be talking to them in a much more louder tone. I might be exuberant. I might be kind of adding a little dance to my step. And this, please don't take this as overgeneralization. These are things that we see. And so then we're saying, is that contributing to that? So those are things that we need to study more in depth and saying, what are our own cultural backgrounds playing into this? Do we think that this is appropriate behavior, but this isn't? And what is leading us to make some of those assumptions? And then how do we deal with it? In both of those cases, it would be like, hey, quiet down a little bit. We need to be able to move to class from class to class. It would not be a behavior referral. But some of those things that we notice, are they leading to our perceptions about students?
It seems like you could get either in a positive spiral where students feel more and more trust in the school and its culture, or you can get into a negative spiral where they feel less and less, and then you see more defiance. Where do you think you are with that?
Well, actually, we try to take data on that as well. So we distribute surveys to our kids, actually 3 times a year, about how they feel about Ames Middle School. Do they feel connected? Do they feel safe? Do they feel that they have a trusted adult that they can talk to? And we haven't done our winter function of this. We did it last in the fall. And the results were very positive, that about 95% of our students felt that this was a safe place for them, a good place for them, and they could go to someone if they had a problem. So, yes.
Was that data analyzed along racial lines?
No, it wasn't. That's a good point. That wasn't at that point in time, because we were trying to do like a barometer of our building.
Mm-hmm. What is your vision for the school in terms of decreasing that achievement gap and also the disparity in discipline incidents between Black youngsters and whites and others?
My vision is to create a great environment and a learning environment for all students. And this sounds weird perhaps, but I'm very excited about this, because this is work that we've already started that we're aware of. And sometimes just drawing a little bit of attention to it gives it more credence, more credibility, more notoriety, so that we say, oh, this is an issue and that we are working toward this. I know that our staff is the right staff to do this work. I know they can do this work. I know they are dedicated to kids. I know all of us have the best intentions with our kids. I believe that with some professional development, with some outside resources, we can improve our skills and we can work better and stronger together than we do individually. It will take time, and I don't expect this to happen overnight, but it's not a problem, or it's not a situation that was created overnight. So just, again, drawing the attention to it and noting that it is – Jim Collins is good to great. The enemy of great is good. And we've always had a good school. I would say we've always had a great school. But it's been difficult for me to create that sense of urgency. Wow, guys, we need to take a look at this data when we have, you know, our test scores that are consistently high. So I take this as a good opportunity.
Okay. You mentioned your staff and their leadership, potential leadership in this area. How about the students? Do you see the students taking a role in helping educate staff and other students about their culture and maybe what their lives are like?
Yes, and I love that you mentioned that, because I think too often, like I was talking earlier, we leave the students out of the equation. They've had opportunities. We've had different groups come in for different purposes, and each time when we have a group come in to interview students or say, I really want to get this information from students, we are blown away by their insight and their candor and their ability to really, really talk about what their lives are like. So I know that one of our pieces of work last year was to meet with groups who are underrepresented and to have just little small group sessions with them. And it was interesting to me to have, and I met with some, Dr. Jones met with some, Mrs. Schleichman met with some, we had counselors meet with some, and we were all kind of surprised, because they just wanted to be heard. They're like, you're asking me a question. I'm not in trouble, or I'm not trying to get a teacher fired, any of those things. No, we really want to know what is this experience like. So we got a lot of information that actually we used to create some of those surveys I referred to here just a few minutes ago. But we wanted to make sure that we were getting their voice in there as well, and that work will continue.
I've also heard about a group called Resolve Iowa, or some kind of mediation service where folks from the community come in and help mm-hmm. students learn how to resolve conflicts. Do you see that playing a role in your building?
It's a little too early to tell. They've only been into the school on a limited basis this year. I think that we have to be very intentional about which conflicts we ask them to resolve. And very purposeful about that. I want to work with them more to kind of define their roles and to work with them in that role.
Okay. Well, Final question. What kind of support on the district level have you had in addressing this problem?
We've had the support that we've asked for up to this point. So I think that it was essential that we had our January PD date. In the past, our October and our January PD dates are sometimes more district-oriented. And we asked at the beginning of the year, can those please be building days? Because we've looked at our building data, and I don't know that our building data looks like any other building, and we really wanted to focus on that. So number one, that we just needed to, again, raise that awareness and share some of that data with our teacher teams. From this point on, we're going to be doing some problem solving and brainstorming as far as what additional supports. One of the things we've been talking about is building that cultural competency. Do we need to get experts in here to talk about what are some assumptions that we make and how can we work with that better? It's difficult for me as a white, older female to relate to all of the different racial backgrounds and some of their experiences that they've had. So we need to get additional resources into our schools as we go through our plan.
Okay, well, thank you, Pam Stangland, for your principal of Amos Middle School, for speaking with me today about the troubling achievement gap between white and black students at Amos Middle School.
Thank you.